4CRB now presents The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group. With a large team of highly experienced professionals, you can feel safe knowing that Bell Legal can help you with your legal needs.
And a very good morning to you. The late John Fradgley with you for another program of The Law and You. Your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 9:30. All you need to do is give us a call. And my apologies for being late this morning. I was just saying to Oliver here, there's no rhyme or reason to the traffic. Left at exactly the same time last week and got here 10 minutes early. And today it's 10 minutes late. But there you go. But Helen has been waiting very patiently on the phone. And we say a very good morning. Hi, Helen. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. Yes, look, I've just got two quick questions. My partner passed away 6 months ago.
Right.
And the house is in both our names. Mm-hmm. Can I sell the house even though he's passed?
Do you know whether it's held as joint tenants or tenants in common?
Oh, both our names are on the deed.
Yes, but you can hold in one of two ways. You can either hold the property as joint tenants, and if you hold as joint tenants, the property automatically devolves on you as the surviving joint owner, and all that needs to be done in that case is to lodge a request to record death with the titles office. You need the death certificate, obviously. And once that's lodged, it will register normally fairly quickly, and you could proceed with the sale. If the house is owned by you as tenants in common, then it will depend on what your partner's will said. If your partner's will said that he left the house to you, or he left his whole estate to you, then there would need to be what's called a transmission by death done, and a copy of the will, or sorry, the original of the will, unless you've got probate, the original of the will would need to be lodged with that application to transmit. So that's the first thing you've got to sort out, Helen. The second aspect to that is that you can in fact sell as long as you put a condition in the contract making it subject to the registration of the request to record death or the transmission by death, as the case may be. So the most important thing for you first is to check how the property is held. If it's held as joint tenants, that's going to be quite a simple process. And that's normally the way most married couples will hold a property. But often if people are not married, or it's a second marriage, or there are children from previous relationships, it's more common then that they will hold as tenants in common. And when you hold as tenants in common, you can actually hold uneven shares. So tenants in common can be two-thirds, one-third, or it can be 50-50. So that's the first thing you need to check on that title. I would recommend that you perhaps speak to the solicitor who's going to look after the sale of the property for you, and they would be able to assist you to advise what steps need to be taken in order to get the title into your name.
Yeah, and also just a quick one. We did one of those free will kits.
Right.
We did it 24 years ago, but the only thing is we've got it dated, but we didn't sign it. And
oh,
with
goodness.
With him gone now, but he's got. But on the will, it's got there that that the house has been left to me.
Right.
But it hasn't been signed. Is that still valid?
Did you get married after that document was
prepared?
No. Okay.
No.
All right.
No,
look. It may be. I'm just hoping against hope for you that you hold the property as joint tenants, because if you hold as tenants in common and you've got an unsigned will, then there could be some rather difficult issues to sort out. It'll be a question of whether the court will regard the unsigned will as representing his testamentary wishes. So it's far from certain that that document will stand up at all.
Right. Well, why can't I sort of just sell the house privately, you know?
Because you can't transfer title unless it's in your name. You can't sign for a person who's deceased.
Oh, So you may look.
Let's hope the property is owned as joint tenants. Then you won't have a problem. But if it is tenants in common, there's potentially quite a problem there for you. So you definitely need to get some legal advice as soon as possible, Helen.
Okay, thank you for that. Anyway, all the best.
And the time is just coming up to 19 minutes past nine. As we say, a very good morning to Lucy. G'day, Lucy. How are you today? Lucy, are you there? Hello, Lucy. Lucy, are you there? Yes, Lucy, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Just a quick question.
Sure.
We recently sold our house, and all solicitors these days do electronically everything.
A lot of law firms now are using what's called the PEXA system, P-E-X-A, which is an electronic settlement system. That's quite right, yes.
That's right. But how do I know if they are legitimate or because of the number of scams at the moment?
Well,
how do I know who I'm dealing with?
Well, the best thing to do is make sure that you deal with a reputable law firm.
Yes, that's what it seems. How do I check if the law firm is reputable?
Obviously, if you know people who've recommended you to that law firm, who've used that law firm.
Yes, that sort of thing.
You could ring the Queensland Law Society and just ask them if it's a Queensland property, ask them for a recommendation to a law firm in your area that does conveyancing. And you would need to check whether they use the PEXA system. There are some lawyers around who are not using PEXA, but they're now few and far between. And I think I read something. I don't practice in the area of conveyancing, but I thought I read something somewhere recently where the government is going to move to it being mandatory to use the PEXA system. So it's probably a good idea to bite the bullet. I do have to say that I've been involved in quite a number of PEXA sales within our office in my capacity as executor of an estate or trustee of a trust, and it works incredibly well. I'm always initially very cautious of these changes, these electronic changes, and when they abolish title deeds, and now, of course, paper titles are absolutely useless because they're no longer used, even if you have one. So, look, times change, systems change, but it seems like the checks and balances that are in place for the system appear to work quite well.
Yeah, I understand we are progressing forward, but at the same time, it is a bit daunting not to know who you're dealing with.
Well, you know who you're dealing with because you're dealing with the law firm that that you engage to act for you in relation to the matter, and then they'll be dealing with another law firm, and both of those law firms will be members of the PEXA system. So there's absolutely no doubt about the PEXA system. It works, and the money gets there, etc. There's no problems with any of that. As I say,
if it's recommended by someone who's used it, or if it's recommended by the agent, it should be okay.
If you have recommendation from someone who's used a particular law firm and they've been very happy with the service they've received, you can ring the Queensland Law Society and ask them for a recommendation to a law firm can act for you and that that deals in the PEXA system. They would be able to assist. All right then.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, Lucy. All the very best. And the time is just coming up to 23 minutes past nine. As we say hi to Lorraine. G'day, Lorraine. How are you today?
Hello?
Yes, Lorraine. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
How can I help?
I just wanted to know, the woman next door has got two rubber trees. They're not real big yet, but I just wondered who's responsible for the damage if they cause any in the sewerage and that.
Right, okay. Well, are you talking about the sewerage on your property?
Well, also there's a sewerage main goes down behind the fences, but that's not my worry. I'm just worried about mine.
Right, okay. So Well, I suppose what you can do, I acknowledge what you're saying, because rubber trees certainly have a reputation for having very extensive and aggressive root systems. So I would suggest probably speaking to your neighbour about installing what's called a root barrier on the boundary to prevent the root systems from those rubber trees coming into your property. Because they're, as you say, they're certainly they've certainly got a reputation for causing problems. I think it's rubber trees and umbrella trees, from memory, are the two that have that's as well as figs, of course. So that would be my recommendation, would be to speak to the neighbour. You might speak to the neighbour about your concern and say, look, you know, my preference would be, if possible, if you could remove them and replant them somewhere else where we know they're not going to get into my property. But if they're already too big to be moved...
No, they're not too big, but okay. There's no way she would talk. You know, she's always complaining about everybody in the neighbourhood, so...
Oh, I see.
Well, you wouldn't...
Well, the only thing I could suggest to you then would be that you perhaps look at installing a root barrier on your side of the fence.
So if they get into our sewage, we have to pay the...
Well, what I would suggest you could do is write a letter to the neighbour and express your concern about the rubber trees, and just say, you know, that you're concerned that they will eventually grow up and potentially get into the sewerage system and cause problems on your property, and that you're just placing her on notice that if they do, in fact... if the root system does in fact come into your property and cause problems with any of your drainage, that you'll be holding her liable. Because that way she's on notice, and then you might then be able to take the matter to the Queensland Civil and Administrative Tribunal if and when a problem arises, and you've got that letter going back to whatever date where you've said to the lady, look, these trees can potentially be a problem, you're putting her on notice. You could recommend in your letter that if she wishes to leave them where they are, that she should consult an arborist or a horticulturalist about installing a root barrier, an appropriate root barrier, to ensure that the trees won't, the root system won't come through, and also just put in there, but if they do, that you're just placing on record that any damage that's subsequently caused to your drainage system, that you'll be looking to her for the cost of repair.
Approximately how much would that cost to get a solicitor to do it?
You'd probably be looking at maybe $250 plus GST.
That's cheaper than doing the sewerage.
That's for sure. You could always ring up the law firm and just tell them what your problem is and ask them how much they're going to charge to do a letter to your neighbour. But I would think, just at a rough guess, that would probably be about the cost.
Okay, it's just everybody says, oh, don't worry, you know, she's got to fix it. But I thought, oh, I don't know about that.
Yes, no, well, look, if she's not aware of the problem, then it is arguable about whether she would be liable for the damage caused. But certainly if you place her on notice that there is a potential problem, so she's been alerted to the fact at a time when it would be possible to either remove the trees or relocate them or put in a root barrier, and she does nothing, then I would think that a court would take notice of that in the event that there is damage caused to your pipes.
And the inconvenience is going to be if they do get into it.
Oh, well, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're okay, thank you.
Okay, Lorraine, all the very best with that. And the time on 4CRB is 28 minutes past 9. The Law and You is the program. We probably don't have time for any more calls today, but I will leave you with one thing that I was reading during the week which really caught my eye, and that is ASIC is taking a couple of companies to court. One is called Rent for Keeps, and the other one is called Layaway Depot. And these two companies lease white goods and electronics to low-income people, and they apparently are alleged to be charging more than they lawfully should be, and ASIC is concerned about the business model and also whether it breaches the credit legislation in Australia. One example that was given was that a consumer using Centrelink payments paid almost $2,500 for a fridge that retailed for $365, while another person paid $1,200 for a mobile phone, which retailed for just $249. And ASIC is reviewing the conduct of these two companies because they're very concerned about them offering this sort of facility to vulnerable consumers and ensuring that vulnerable people are in fact protected. So again, as I often say, the wheels of justice turn slowly, but turn they do, and that's just another example. I'll keep you posted when I hear what the outcome of those legal proceedings might be, but just a timely reminder to keep an eye on those sorts of things if you have relatives or friends who are thinking about going into those sorts of arrangements, to make sure that they do get a proper disclosure statement which clearly articulates how much interest and rent they're going to pay over the term of the arrangement compared with what the cost of buying it outright at the start might be. And it also comes back, I think, to one thing that I was listening to just recently about the fact that these days, people no longer seem to want to save up and then have the pleasure of going into a store and buying something outright. Today, all the advertising is about have it now, pay for it later, and I think that's where a lot of these problems are coming from. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning. I look forward to being back with you again next week. But as always, till then, it's goodbye and God bless.
You've been listening to The Law and You, proudly brought to you by Bell Legal Group, the Gold Coast's longest established law firm, helping Gold Coasters since 1955. Call them today on 55 97 33 66.